From a career path of bartending to the U.S. Army to pro musician to pilot and farmer, John Starnes and his story today.
Welcome to Daniel Britt and Friends, an hour of good music and fun conversations featuring gospel music's brightest new artists, as well as legendary tributes and memories from its past. Now, here is Daniel Britt.
John Starnes is today's guest, and we're picking back where we left off last time. This is part two in our conclusion of our discussion with John to learn more about his life, his story, how the gospel changed him, and the impact he's had on our lives through his years of incredible music. So let's pick back up with that conversation. John Starnes, here on Daniel Britt and Friends. I want to give you, I'm going to do this a couple times, I'll give you a name of somebody you worked with, especially during the Swaggart years with those crusades, and then kind of react to the name and in a way introduce us to that person as if we've never known them before. In some cases, we may not know the name, but in some cases, we will. So first out here, Janet Paschal.
Oh, real sweetheart. I don't think anyone has ever... that I've ever talked to has ever had anything negative to say. And everything they say about her is exactly who she is. She's just very sweet, very kind, genuine, tender heart. She has no agenda. She's not trying to be, you know, leave a legacy for herself. She's just trying to be all that she can be for God. Mm-hmm. And she was a very, very neat lady. I haven't talked to her in a couple of years, but very neat lady, very neat.
Another name that I've met, I've sat with her, and she started telling stories, and I think she actually helped connect us. It's Tana Lonnon.
Oh, my goodness. Yes, yes. Tana traveled with us for a long time and have some great experiences. We were all like a bunch of, kids. We were kids in a way, you know, in our late 20s, early 30s, and to go to Africa and to travel Central America and all of these places. And Tana was one of those steady rocks as well. She was who she said she was, and she didn't pretend, and she doesn't now, I'm sure. We keep a Facebook every now and then. But she's the real deal. You know, yeah. Janet is, Tana is. Most of the people I've known, fortunately, you're probably not going to ask me about anybody who wasn't the real deal.
Sure. So how many years were you traveling internationally like that and doing the Crusades?
Well, with Jimmy, I was there for a total of 13 and a half years. The last 3 years or so were rather, you know, tumultuous. Sure. And we didn't travel quite as much. So that was one of the reasons why, you know, leaving ended up becoming just a matter of time, because we sold the airplane. So no, I was no longer flying, and I had no duties in the office. And then I started traveling some with Dr. Charles Stanley. Mm-hmm. And I went down and started doing some occasional singing with Pastor Hagee down in San Antonio. Mm-hmm. And some of the traveling with, I went to Israel with Pastor Hagee one time and went to Israel several times with Dr. Stanley. And although they didn't do any overseas crusades, as it were, you know, I did that. And then after several years, about in 2004, I was invited to go with Benny Hinn. And at that time, I really didn't care to do it. I didn't really want to. It was bigger than life, and I just, you know, the Crusades were so big, and I felt like my time was over. But he asked me to go one time, and they persuaded me, so I went one time, and when I got out to sing, I said, this is what I was made to do, is stand in front of the cameras and, you know, 20,000 people. I felt at home. Wow. And so for about the next 4 years, I traveled with them and just had a marvelous time and got to experience some wonderful, wonderful things. And going back, if I can tie it back real quick, you talked about denominations earlier. Yeah. And how we tend to divide ourselves so easily on that. And when I was with him, His way of doing things is a lot different than Charles Stanley. His way is different than doing than John Hagee and than Jimmy. And one of the things that I learned during that time was, how do you look at someone and find God in them? Most evangelists are somewhat eccentric, and they're A-type personalities. And, you know, yet I learned there quite and became quite comfortable in the fact that I could find God in someone that reacted differently than I did, that didn't worship like I did. But I learned to gain a respect for people who were, you know, different than I was. And it was probably one of the, I think one of the greater lessons, if I had to write down three or five that I would put on a tombstone or something like that, learning to appreciate, you know, God in someone whose personality is different from you or the way that you would do it. And I learned it there, that's for sure.
Did you ever feel like, because you did so much international traveling, and correct me on the domestic stuff, but, you know, most of the artists I talk to, they're used to traveling, okay, primarily in the Southeast. When you talk about Southern gospel music, I mean, that's why it's got the name. But then, you know, expand into the Northeast, the Midwest, the West Coast, South, you know. So they're used to traveling, especially the lower 48. And then they get expansion, they go more into Canada and things. And occasionally they'll do something overseas, but very rarely. You, on the other hand, were getting, I'm assuming here, a big dose of international and totally different cultures. But were you maybe not getting as much interstate time as maybe your counterparts on the gospel circuit?
Yeah, exactly. And learning to communicate, that's where two of the greatest communicators in music are, I think, Jimmy Swaggart and Bill Gaither. They know how, and they are so keyed in and so tuned to trying to reach people's hearts. They understand that you've got to touch their mind too. I learned when I did my church services, after I was with all these large groups, that humor, my natural, I don't call it humor as much as I call it immaturity. And that would come out and make people laugh. And when you got people laughing, you had unity. And so the Baptists laughed just like the Church of God and just like the Catholics. And and that unity is the music. And Jimmy was just a master at doing that when we'd go overseas, of picking music that, and he was tough on us. He would not let us, he would not settle for anything other than 100% heartfelt music. And I remember seeing that one time in a crusade, and I think it was Lagos in West Africa. And we were there, and on the stage we had monitors where we could see the video feed, and we were in front of probably 40,000 people or something like that. It was a soccer stadium. And we were out there, and I'm looking. You couldn't see the people; they're too far away, so you couldn't see anybody. Uh-huh. But the cameras would get in close, and I think it was Janet, I think it was Jimmy. Somebody was singing, and matter of fact, it was on all of them. I'm sitting back there looking at these monitors and watching people that do not speak our language, watching music touch their hearts so much that tears are just streaming down their cheeks, and you know it's not the words. It's the music. Music's powerful. And Jimmy had just a wonderful ear of knowing, still does, of knowing how to pick the music that is the common denominator and brings that out.
Looking at where your life has taken you, especially with regards to music and how you communicate the gospel that way, and knowing that your mom passed away when you were 9, so she witnessed none of this, how do you think she would... How do you think she is going to respond when you get home, or if she were still around today and she had to look back on your life thus far and say, wow, John, this is pretty incredible. I mean, what would her reaction be? Would she be blown away?
Well, I know what you want me to say on that as far as, you know, the way the traditional view would be, you know, she'd be very proud. But yeah. I like to think there's an Andre Crouch song where, you know, his friends have gone to heaven and he gets there and he says, hey, didn't you miss me? And they go, no, you know, because there is no sorrow in this place. So we didn't miss you. You know, we didn't. This is so much bigger than anything on earth. So I think there's, and I heard a funeral given one time where the pastor said, you know, if a year is a thousand is a year. He said, if you break it down, you do the math on that. He said, he was talking to the lady whose husband had just passed away. And he said, you know, if you live for another 30 years, by the time you get to heaven, using this math, your husband will probably just be standing up at the feet of Jesus, you know, and you're, you know, it's like he just got there and boom, he stands up and there you are. And I tend to think of it as that way, but no, I think she would have, you know, been pleased, and she had a good sense of humor, and she was, you know, the world's best mom. And I think she would have, and she will be very happy. Matter of fact, who knows? Maybe she was the one that kind of put a word in and said, hey, you know, you know, I used to hear him sing. Why don't you let him sing? Come on, come on, come on.
Yeah, yeah, that's good.
You never know.
There's no one great among us. We're nothing on our own. We make mistakes and sometimes slip. Just common flesh and bone. But I know he'll prove just what I say. We're of a special kind. When he was on the cross, I was on his mind. He knew me, yet he loved me. He whose glory makes the heaven shine. That's why I sing so. Thorn on his head, the blood that stained his scarlet robe, well, it stained it crimson red. Though his eyes were on the crowd that day, he looked ahead.
Yes, he did.
listening to Daniel Britt and Friends with today's guest, John Starr. And more of our conversation here in just a moment.
Sometimes we go to church, don't feel like being blessed. Sitting on the back row singing, bless me if you can. Yet when the Spirit of the Lord starts moving in your soul, can't help but get excited, let the hallelujahs roll. Hallelujah feels the same in every language. It will start the joy bells ringing in your soul. I said clap your hands, everybody sing praises to our King of Kings. Let the hallelujahs roll. Now you may meet a brother from a foreign land. He'll speak a different language, not a word you'll understand. But your spirit will identify as he begins to testify. And let the hallelujahs roll. Hallelujah feels the same in every language. It will start the joy bells ringing in your soul. I said clap your hands, everybody sing praises to our King of Kings.
Listening so to Daniel and Britt and Friends with today's guest, with John Starr.
Team, and then you had time, you said, with Charles Stanley, John Hagee, and Benny Hinn. So after that...
And Bill Gaither.
And Bill Gaither. That's true. Talk about the Gaither years. What was that like, and how did that start?
It was like a lot of them do. It was a call out of the blue and said, you know, you need to be here at such and such a time. Do such and such, you know, wear this,
yeah.
You know, these kind of colors and, you know, have three songs and be ready to sing.
Yeah.
And I thought the first one was probably going to be the last one. And but it, you know, I kept getting the calls. And
what year are we talking about? What era?
Oh, gosh. I don't know. You know, I've got a big plaque in here somewhere that has all the different early, the first DVDs.
And we're talking about homecoming videos. So this was the
homecoming videos.
Yeah, this is
right.
Like probably the early 90s this stuff started. So,
yeah, I think I was on the second homecoming video. And then I did the next like dozens or so.
Wow.
Yeah. So it was a lot of fun. And to be very honest, I was not excited about going because I said all these other musicians and, I don't have a high esteem of my own talent, compared to some of the people that, like Gordon Mote, he played on one of my albums. I mean, that's somebody who he has got a gift that's just phenomenal, you know? And, so I don't even try Buddy Green, you know, these people you mentioned earlier. Right. I mean, these guys are monsters in my eyes. And I mean, they're just so great at what they had, the talent, the gifts. And to be in a room full of these guys, I was like, no way, you know, I'm not going to survive. I mean, this is going to be ridiculous. But I had learned a great thing early on at a crusade. We had a fellow named Fred Johnson who got up and sang, and he was the most easygoing fellow, and he could just get up and just casually sing something and win the audience over in just a phenomenal way. And he was singing in literally about 20 minutes of encores. And this pastor was behind me, a young guy, and he leaned forward and doing like we all can do. He just said, "Hey, John, how does it feel to have to get up and sing after Fred?" Because, I mean, the people were going nuts. Uh-huh. And he knew I was next. And I turned around, and it was something I said that I didn't think of consciously before that. But I turned around and I said, you know, when you're in the spirit, when you're singing for God, I said, God does not compete with himself. And he's not trying to let, you know, be shine brighter in one person and then all of a sudden go, "Ooh, I want to see if I can top that." You know, yeah. He has it all planned out. So it gave me a calm and a reassurance that I've tried to carry with me for a while. But those were some great, great, wonderful times. And I just felt so honored to be in those rooms with all those people. And what was amazing was the common denominator was the bigger the star, so to speak, the nicer the and more genuine the individual. And Bill wouldn't put up with foolishness, so maybe that was just it. Maybe he only invited once. But they were some, I mean, everybody was just always so kind and so nice.
And we know Bill Gaither has this amazing network of friends and musicians. So like, how did he have your number? Was there something prior to these videos that you guys had crossed paths or worked together?
No, not really. I don't know. I think we had a fellow there that I was with a record label at the time, and I think that fellow on the record label got in touch with him and said, you know, you need to have him. And I had met him one time at a Gaither concert. It was in a city where we were having a Swagger Crusade. And I went down front afterwards. Michael English was there, and I knew him, and I wanted to say hello to him. Mm-hmm. And Bill saw me, and Bill recognized me and said, "Hey, how are you doing?" He said, "You know, I love your singing. Would love to have you." So that was that would take me to the thing I think that I was most honored is I got to audition for the vocal band once and spend a whole day with Bill Gaither. Didn't make it. But, you know, to audition with them, be like saying, you know, I auditioned, you know, for the Denver Broncos, you know, make it, but I auditioned, I tried out. So I got to try out for, the Gaither Vocal Band, spent a whole day with Bill. And, it was just a wonderful time.
Wow.
You know, I feel very privileged. I feel so privileged that I was so close to so many of these people that, you know, have in the last part of the 20th century and, you know, even now were so prominent in shaping, you know, Christian music and, you know, ministry as well.
Absolutely. John Starnes is with us and you're listening to Daniel Britt and Kirk.
Let's all go down to the river. Yeah, there's a man, he's walking on the water. Come along with me. All I want to see is this man walking on the water. He can raise the dead from the grave. I'll change the water and turn it into wine. He can make the lame walk. He can make the dumb talk. Open up the eyes of the blind. So let's all go down to the river. Yes, there's a man, he's walking on the water. Come along with me. All I want to see is this man walking on the water. Jesus is this man at the river, and he's washing people's sins away. He can save your soul. You give him control and get ready. So let's all go down to the river. Yes, there's a man, he's walking on the water.
come along with me.
All I want to see
is this man walking on the water. Man walking on the water.
John Starr. You're listening to Daniel Britt and Friends. Hey, John, I know that you've got so much education within life happens just by doing and experiencing. So obviously you paved a way, believe it or not, with the international traveling. You learned a lot doing that. And then you fast forward to where we are today, and life has changed so dramatically. You've got social media. We text probably more than we talk. In fact, the word text has become a verb, you know. Mobile phones, instant messaging has changed our social behavior. We don't even speak in complete sentences anymore, if you really think about it. Writing in cursive handwriting has been challenged. You get where I'm going here. Communicating to an audience, whether it's here at home or whether it's abroad, have you seen that change a little bit, or have you found there's been some challenges now reaching people in today's age versus 20 or 30 years ago?
Oh, it's been an incredible challenge and change. One of the reasons is, or one of the results, I think, of it is when I used to go to churches early on, the fact that I could stay on pitch throughout most of a song was just enough to just have people just go, wow, this is amazing. Yeah. You know, because, you know, Bobby here in our choir can't do that. And they just weren't used to hearing somebody stay on pitch. Well, you know, now if I go to a church, they've got 20 people that can sing circles around me. And especially as I'm, you know, getting older and not able to hit all the high notes I used to be able to, not to hold them out as long. And so they've got tons of people that actually are better at quality. So I've seen the quality come up of the entertainers. And so you get to where people, in my opinion, are looking for that level. They're looking to be wowed by the prowess of the talent almost more than they are getting up and singing a simple song and just touching their hearts. I did, you know, if I left somebody out, I guess it was T.D. Jakes that I went and sang at his Potter's House several times.
Yeah.
And I was surprised. We did a couple crusades, and I asked him because the music they had was just phenomenal. And, you know, I joked because of the obvious racial differences. I was, you know, one of the only white guys, you know, in an 8,000 people. And I asked him, I said, what do you want me to do? You know, I mean, and he said, I brought you here to be you. I want you to be you. So I got up and sang in the garden, you know, rather than trying to, you know, to do something real hip and up. And I just sang what was on my heart. And at that time, that's what it was. And, you know, it touched the people. So I've seen a huge difference. I hope we get back to the place where people are looking for to be stirred in their hearts and to feel that. That's what I hope happens, because that's really that's what music's all about. And I had a wonderful talk with a fellow, a black brother, who was crying as he was talking. He said, my brothers, he said, they don't know how to write music because they haven't been involved in music. He said, I'm talking about that because we were doing a music school somewhere. Uh-huh. And he said, all they've been doing is basically at that time was rap. And he said, they don't have any practice constructing melodies. And I know this is a gross, you know, generalization here.
Right.
And it's quick, and, you know, 100 people could challenge that. But I think basically, and by and large, that's what we're dealing with, is we're losing that ability to craft melodies. In my songwriting career, the time was spent on wordsmithing, and very little time was spent on crafting the melodies and worrying about them and fretting over them like we would the words. And if we thought we had clever words, we had anything, and then the music, we'd just throw it on top of something. And that, I think, has been, I hope that is changes in the next generation, you know, that people would be satisfied with doing just a good melody and let the lyrics, because if you have a great melody, you can write all kinds of lyrics around it, you know. And but it's hard to sing "He Touched Me" to any other melody.
Yeah. Today's guest, John Starnes. More of our conversation continues here on Daniel Britt and Friends.
I searched and searched from day to day to know in my heart that I was saved. I wanted to know the answer for sure. So when God's Spirit spoke to me, this is the hour you can be free. I called on the Lord that night and the answer came. The answer came.
Britt and Friends, today talking to John Starnes. Okay, living in Nashville, Tennessee, John's been married over 35 years. You got two daughters, right?
Right, yep. They're, and I have, more importantly, four grandkids.
They tend to give that to you, don't they? I mean, so is it true? You just, as much as you enjoyed your daughters, now these grandkids are just like, whoa, I wish I'd have had them first.
Oh, yes, without a doubt. And it's phenomenal. Plus, I have, out of the four, three of them are boys. So wow. I had two girls, and now I've got, you know, three boys. The only negative is that two of the grandkids live up in New York, and two live down north of Atlanta out in Woodstock.
Yeah. At what point, I'm assuming back with the Swagger Crusades, at what point did you sing a song that would eventually come to maybe define you as an artist? And so, two-part question here. What was that first song that really became, that was your song, and you, the audience would not let you leave without singing that song? And then the second part of the question, what was the song? And then number two, did you know it the first time you sang it, this was going to be your song?
I would have to say, in my opinion, and you can tell me if you think this is right, is Jerusalem. Mm. That became the song that when I would go places, people would ask. And it was a song that Jimmy more or less forced me to learn and said, you know, you'll sing this. And I was like, I listened to it. And I went, no. You know, I don't like it. but I sang it, and I saw that, you know, it really touched and moved a lot of people. If you were to go to Israel today, and tomorrow you'd get on a tour bus, and before you get into the city of Jerusalem, they would play my version of Jerusalem on the bus.
Wow.
It's on all the tour buses, and I don't think I've had so many people that tell me when they go on the tours, they still hear it today. So whenever I go to a church and they ask me to do it, I have the old track to it, so it's a little higher than I'm comfortable with now. So I try to get out of singing it whenever I can. But in a lot of the younger folks that don't have the experience with that song, you know, it doesn't really touch them. It's kind of old. I like singing Ship Ahoy or something like that. One of the old songs of the church, but for a lot of folks my age and older, you know, they love it and they appreciate it.
One night while I was sleeping, I had a dream so fair. I stood in old Jerusalem beside the temple there. I heard the children singing, and ever as they sang, I thought the voice of angels from heaven in answer rang. I thought the voice of angels from heaven an answer rang.
Jerusalem, Jerusalem, hark how the angels sing. Hosanna in the highest, Hosanna to your King.
And then I thought my dream was changed. The streets no longer rang, as with the glad hosannas that the little children sang. The sun grew dark with mystery, and the morn was cold and chilled, as the shadow of a cross arose upon a lonely hill. As the shadow of a cross arose upon a lonely hill.
Jerusalem,
once again, my dream was changed. New earth there seemed to be. I saw the holy city beside the crystal sea. The light of God was on its streets, and the gates were open wide, that all who would might enter. Sun to shine by day, for it was the new Jerusalem that would not pass away. It was the new Jerusalem.
Jerusalem, sing for the night is o'er. Hosanna.
Starnes, it's been great catching up with you and listening to some great music. And, you know, when I, you know, nowadays, the way you may, might go and just see what are people listening to of your collection, of your library. Of course, Jerusalem is in that top list. And then some of the songs we've heard, like My God is Real,
yes.
or Let's All Go Down to the River, which absolutely has to be one of my favorites of yours. That's fun.
Yeah, and that was a song that I listened to when I was on the farm back in those early days. I listened to the Lewis family's version of that. And so when it came time to picking songs, I was early on in the Crusades. That's how that came about. And, of course, I had to put my... No matter how I would try to sound like them, it's going to come out sounding like me. So it did. And I think that and Lighthouse, I sang that the first weekend I heard it and it came out. Of course, we were, you know, we would do copy material. And so when that came out the first weekend I heard it, I learned it and sang it in Crusades and I ended up singing it. I think Lighthouse probably defined me more than any other song, I guess, other than Jerusalem. And it, perhaps even more because I can still sing that wherever I go. And Holy, Holy, Holy,
yep.
That one I was a phenomenal song and probably some of the strongest experiences I've ever had singing in front of audiences were with that. Mm. You know, amazing thing. So, you know, those and then some of the fast. When I was in rock and roll, that's all I did was fast songs. And so right. ended up, you know, coming in and switching and seeing the ballads kind of take over. And I would always want to do fast and a lot of the people would want me to do ballads.
We love these songs, fast or slow. John Starnes here on Daniel Britt and Britt.
My soul. John Stearns.
The more I trust him, the more I love him. Nothing good for me he'll deny. The longer I know him, the better I can show him. I couldn't stop now if I tried. Oh, it gets sweeter.
So today, what's your outlook as far as music is concerned? How much are you singing? How much are you out there? And are you still hearing from people who might have followed you years ago and they become reacquainted with you? Again, because of Facebook and Twitter and all this stuff that connects us together quicker.
Yeah, I'll be very honest with you and very upfront that for a while I got to the point where I'm hearing and if I had a publicist, they'd probably be slapping me right now. I got to the point where I felt like I was living in the past. Mm-hmm. People would come up, I used to love when you did this, or, oh, when you used to sing this, oh, when you, and no one was talking to me about the present or the future. It was like I was, you know, a relic of the past. Yeah. And so I think I kind of rejected that and consciously, and I said, you know, I have a life. And, the amount of invitations I would get, the number of invitations decreased, and as they have for a lot of people, really. You know, I was telling people, I said, you know, some of the big names when I was growing up, they, you don't hear them in concert anymore. You don't hear them doing concerts. You don't, you know, so it's not just me. It's right. Everybody. I talked to someone the other day whose wife is a prominent singer, and he said she gets like 6 invitations a year, and she was like the darling of Southern Gospel for years and years, 20 years ago. And now she gets 6 a year. So things are changing musically. I'm actually involved in real estate. I've kind of dedicated myself to that. New Year's Eve before last, New Year's Eve of 2013, I guess. I made an official announcement that I was retiring from the full-time pursuit of gospel music.
Yeah.
And then right after that, I got involved in a prison ministry that I helped found called Timothy's Gift. And at Timothy's Gift, we have been given open doors, so to speak, that they lock behind us, to all the prisons throughout the state of Florida. And going in there and singing for the men and the women in the women's prisons, that has been just a phenomenal, phenomenal thing. Matter of fact, what we've done now is it's changed, and I'm not even going on that anymore because we're taking younger kids that have moved to Nashville to become famous, didn't make it perhaps, but have incredible amount of talent, and we put them together and do kind of a USO show with some secular songs that ended up, we end up turning in the corner and bringing it to a spiritual focus at the end where we've been able to have communion, open communions. And we've had wardens walking side by side with inmates and sharing communion. And it's just been, you know, a phenomenal thing. This time and this day and age is changing. There's no question about it. And that's how I see is finding that niche where you are and, you know, touching somebody's heart. If your music's not touching anybody's heart, you know, it's not doing any good for anybody.
Very well said. Wow. Well, John, look, I hope our paths cross soon because I love what you've given to us, not only just your music, but even just your character and all that you stand for. And you've inspired us all through the years and continue to do so. And I really appreciate the time you've taken to talk with us and paint this picture of the life and times of John Starnes. It's interesting stuff.
Well, I don't know about that. Well, thank you, though. Thanks for having me so much. I appreciate it. And yeah, when I come down to Atlanta to see my my two grandsons down there, maybe we can hook up and share some of our commonalities of the love of the city.
Yeah, we'll have to do that. Hey, thanks, man. I do appreciate it.
Thanks. I appreciate it. God bless.
A lighthouse on a hillside that overlooks life's sea. When I'm tossed about, it sends out a light that I might see, and the light that shines in the darkness now will safely lead us on. If it wasn't for that lighthouse, this ship would be no more. And I thank God lives around us, they said, tear that lighthouse down. You see, the big ships don't sail this way anymore. There's just no use in it standing around. But then my mind goes back to that stormy night, just in time. yes, the light from that old lighthouse that stands upon the hill. And I thank God for the lighthouse I owe my life to Him. For Jesus is the lighthouse, and from the rocks of sin He has shone the light around me, that I might clearly see. If it wasn't for the lighthouse, where would this city be? If it wasn't for the lighthouse, where would this city be?
John Starnes here on Daniel Britt and Friends. What a great couple of hours we get to spend listening to some cool music, classic sounds and gospel music, but also getting to know John better. And I learned a lot, and just incredible the way the hand of God was in his life through all those years. Hey, thanks for taking time to join us. And of course, check the website for more information at danielbritt.com. See you back here next time.
You've been listening to Daniel Britt and Friends. Each week, Daniel brings you exciting music, conversation, and news updates from the world of Southern gospel. You can hear many of the interviews again online at danielbritt.com. Make a date next week for Daniel Britt and Friends.